Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of War Report. Today we have, well, we're supposed to have a full house. By that, the regulars, you know what I mean. Myself and five guests. Actually, six guests, because one of our guests who will start the show has to leave maybe halfway through, and we have a person who should be coming on to fill that slot at that time. But at this point, we're having problems with getting a couple of the guests, so I don't know how this is going to go at the moment. But anyway, that's kind of like typical, right? So you guys have been here for 3 years, so you know these things happen. Let me start off by saying, if you got our promotion, you know that we have on as our guest the Alliance for Quality Education, and as the promotion said, this is a grassroots community network of organizations that covers, I think, up and down crossways to the state of New York. They have 100,000 members at least, and that was mind-blowing to me. And the person who I know from this group, Mr. Billy Easton, is a person that I met, was it 14 months ago, Billy, in New York at a one-day conference in Manhattan. And then 14 months later, I'm up in Albany about a couple weeks ago, and this guy walks up to me and he says, "Who the hell are you?" No, he says,
"Ha!
Are you talking?"
I said I met you before down in New York.
Hey, I'm telling it my way. So who the hell are you sounds much better than I met you, okay? So, anyway, we reestablished our acquaintance, and we started talking, and the first thing I said was, "Billy, you know, I have the radio show. Let's get you guys on the show." It's taken a couple of weeks, but here we are. And Billy, welcome to the War Report. And I'm going to briefly just give you an introduction of our rest of our guests and then let them maybe say something about like who they are. We got Yulin, and I can't pronounce your last name, that's why I'm not going any further. And then Kimberly Jane Pierre. And we got, was it Margie? And Billy.
Yeah.
So, Billy, give us a 30-second intro about yourself, and then we'll pass it around the table.
I'm Billy Easton. I'm the executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education. We're a statewide coalition here in New York, as Dr. Miller said.
That's it?
Oh, you want me to say more? I've been working here with AQE for the last 11 years, been involved in organizing for over 30 years on a number of social justice issues. And you know, we're fighting for the public schools that we need and our children deserve, and fighting for the world that we need and our families deserve.
Yulin?
Hi, my name is Yulin. I'm actually currently the assembly member for the 65th district. That's the Assembly District, and we are currently, of course, located in Lower Manhattan. That encompasses Chinatown, South Street Seaport, Battery Park City, and the Financial District.
Margie?
Hello. Thank you for having me here with you guys. My name is Margie Arroyo. I am with Alliance Quality Education. I've been with this organization for at least about 3 to 2 years. I'm a mother of two and also fighting for better education and pre-K.
Okay. Kimberly?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Assemblywoman Kimberly Jean-Pierre. I am Assembly member of the 11th Assembly District out here on Long Island, Suffolk County, which covers areas such as Marjorie, Copeg, Lindenhurst, Deer Park, parts of Deer Park, North Babylon, West Babylon, Wheatley Heights, Wyandanch, Amityville, and I serve as my second term in the New York State Assembly and fighting for quality education and increasing child care services is a top priority of mine.
Okay. We have Juan who just came on. Juan, how are you? Would you introduce yourself, please? Where we were supposed to. Okay.
Okay.
Juan?
Yes?
Okay. Would you introduce yourself? I don't know if we're having a problem with connections or what, so let me go ahead. Everyone, what I was really impressed about Billy and everyone else is that you have this statewide network, over 100,000 members. That in itself, to me, is big time, big time. Because as I have traveled across the country and gone from city to city or state to state, I have not seen an organization that is as either organized as your organization, has as many affiliates as your organization, and certainly not the membership that you have. How did this come about?
Well, AQE, the Alliance for Quality Education, was founded in the year 2000, and we were founded in order to address initially one particular issue, something that's called the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, which is about, it was a lawsuit focused on the huge inequities in education funding in New York State and trying to make sure that all students get the funding for their schools that's necessary to provide what our state constitution mandates as a constitutional right, which is a sound basic education. So it was founded by two community organizing groups at the time, Citizen Action of New York and New York ACORN, which has now, been replaced by New York Communities for Change because ACORN was put out of business by the right-wing Breitbart news outlet that we now see practically running the White House. But anyways, it's a coalition over the years that's been built up with major partner groups, including Citizen Action of New York, New York Communities for Change, Make the Road New York. These are all organizations that do local community organizing in different local communities around the state, primarily among multiracial groups of people, but a lot of African-American and Latino members in Make the Road New York is primarily immigrant communities and brings people together. Those are all multi-issue organizations that bring people together on different issues. And this is the Education Coalition that then involves dozens of other organizations. This year we had over 100 that have endorsed the campaign we're working on. The signature issue we've always worked on is this issue of fair and adequate school funding. We are very pleased that we have such strong relationships with many allies and champions in the state legislature, like the two assembly women who are with us today. And then we work on other issues as well. Some of the things that people mentioned, like pre-K, like child care, and community schools to fight for the adequate, to make sure that everyone, every child, especially in lower-income communities, but in all throughout the state, has access to those kind of programs. And then over the years, we've worked on some other issues, too, like exposing some of the corporate Wall Street investment in the whole charter school and privatization movement and fighting school vouchers working to make sure the state raises taxes on millionaires and billionaires in order to fund not only schools, but everything our communities need.
That's where I think I want to go with our two assembly persons. in terms of what you just said, in terms of why is it that the governor has been able to not follow through on the court's mandated orders to do more in terms of equitable funding? You, Lynn, or Kimberly?
This is Kimberly. I actually, I really want us to kind of like, not focus, I guess, to spend in better terms, there have been, we have an assembly majority who really fights for CFE and quality education and public education, and we just need to get all hands on deck, and that's our Senate and our governor. And it's an inclusive process to ensure that we get everyone on deck to provide and fund these mandated funds and ensure that our public schools receive what they need. So it's not a one party. It's an inclusive process that everyone that has their hand, that has a part of the budget needs to understand this, that it needs to happen collectively.
Yulin?
And this is Yulin. I just wanted to say that actually our Assembly Speaker, Carl Hasty, does actually have a proposal that he's presented, the millionaire's tax proposal that he presented actually.
Hello?
Carl Hasty, our Speaker in the Assembly, and he's proposed that, we ask higher earners pay a little bit more so that our state budget can take care of all of our communities. And I think that his proposal is much more adequate than what the governor has proposed right now, which I believe is inadequate. I think that the state needs much more revenue for our public school children. I mean, I myself am a product of our public schools, and I wouldn't have the opportunities that I have now if it wasn't for our public school system. And we continue to, not fund our public school system, obviously. I mean, my district alone, just for the campaign for fiscal equity that Billy was talking about, my district alone is...
Hello?
Owed... Hello?
Are you guys still there?
Yeah, Juan, we're doing the interview right now. Just wait a minute, okay?
So the campaign for fiscal equity that Billy was talking about, the schools in my district alone are owed $44.6 million here in Lower Manhattan of that CFE funding. We have a severe overcrowding problem in our district, and it's a serious issue, and it's a huge, significant barrier to good quality education. And as a result, I now am part of the School Overcrowding Task Force for my district, which actually looks to brainstorm and implement different solutions to combat that overcrowding, but it's something that, funding is has a direct relationship with how our schools do. So I think that we really desperately need that funding, and we're going to continue to fight for it.
Having the organizational structure behind you that we just mentioned or just identified, does that help you as an assembly person to get the other assembly members on board with this? Because again, 100,000 people, even though they're scattered across the state, is still something that politicians, I don't care what, it be at the assembly, the Senate, the governorship, or U.S. Senate, Congressman, having 100,000 people pushing and supporting their legislatures or their senators, does that really in any way help you get what you were trying to get done?
Did you want to get to that first, Kimberly, or should I go ahead?
You can go, and I'll tap on behind.
Sure. I think that, one of the biggest things that I constantly fight for is for folks to be able to advocate for themselves in government. And I will, say that when people call their legislators, when people talk to their representatives, it always makes a difference. And AQE has done an amazing job in being able to provide a voice for and an access point for so many constituents. I think that it's really important that we, as legislators, are also making it so that we are access points for AQE and all of the other groups that have been constantly fighting for education and for public dollars for public schools, to be able to have a voice and that connection to the legislature, I will continue to make sure that we have folks on our side. But like Kimberly had mentioned, in the assembly, we have so many champions for public school funding, but it's really about making sure that the governor and the Senate also put these things as priorities.
Right, and I just couldn't say it better than my colleague. And, you know, we get constituents, but this is a time where we get letters from across the state and in our constituency that send us letters, phone calls, advocating for public education, and ensuring that we restore funding and our public schools. They meet with us. You know, I happen to serve, my district is where I have part affluent and then part very high needs. And we talk about high needs and where we have some of our students are in portable classrooms because there's no space. So when we talk about we are funding programs like pre-K, and it becomes so competitive on Long Island where it's a competitive grant process where it's not available to all school districts who rightfully deserve pre-K, universal pre-K. And then when we talk about providing that funding, but there's no build out for capital where we have to be forced to put, you know, our students in portable classrooms. And so this is a real need, and you know, I will continue to champion this issue. And we have so many, as my colleague said, we have so many champions in the assembly. But, you know, we need to do more than champion the issue. It's time that we move forward and stop championing the issue. And I speak to all my colleagues and, you know, and advocates that maybe we need to revisit and how we advocate to and have conversations with our senators and the governor, because it's time that we change that wheel and we make the champion the issues into real action and make our and provide our children. It's like unfair, and sometimes it frustrates me just as a human being that we are not funding public education. And I'm a product of public education, and I too would not be here if it wasn't for our public education, and I'm grateful because my parents could not put me in a private school, could not put me in other schools where it would cost them. And it's important that we as government officials, we adequately fund our public education to ensure that every child, no matter where you live, where you come from, because no matter what community we talk about, there are hardworking families that want to ensure that their child gets a better education and gets a quality education.
I think we should mention that the public school system statewide is owed several billions of dollars, and this is what the group was in Albany trying to push the governor and the rest of the legislative body there to actually pay what is owed and pay what the state court has already said years ago. Billy, maybe you can say that more eloquently than I just tried to, in terms of the amount of money that's owed. I think it's been, what, 10 years or more?
Yeah, it's been 10 years, and it's $4.3 billion. That's billion with a B. And the vast majority of that, about 75%, is owed to some of the high-need districts, as we just heard our two assembly women talking about some of the needs in those districts. $4.3 billion is a very large number. It's too large for any of us to actually picture what it is. And the truth is that what it comes down to is if the state does not provide that money, as they have not, then we have the portable classrooms like Assemblywoman Jean-Pierre was talking about. We have students without full access to art and music. We have schools where there's one guidance counselor for 800 students, like they have in Yonkers. We have schools with, like in Utica, which are filled with refugee students, and in a small city of 60,000, They have 40 languages spoken in this 40 foreign languages spoken within the school district, yet the classrooms for those students are over 30 to 35 students in a class. So we have our poorest schools in the state being where students have very few opportunities for advanced courses like either in career education or in college prep and advanced placement courses. So we have all of these consequences that come from the state failing to fulfill its constitutional obligations. And, you know, we have the Assembly with us, and I agree strongly with Assemblywoman Jean-Pierre that we have to think differently how to get out of our normal box of advocacy and move from all of us being champions to somehow making this happen now, because we have a problem with the governor and the state Senate not delivering, and the Assembly is fighting hard with us, and the Speaker of the Assembly is fighting hard with us, but we need to get over that hump. And, you know, this is a constitutional right, and it's more than that. It's something that really is a moral obligation and is really necessary. And, of course, the children who are the students who are most shorted out as a result in their educational opportunities are students living in poverty, immigrant students, and students of color. And that's why, you know, this is what's happening. This is the consequence of the state's failure to provide the $4.3 billion it's owed.
Keeping that figure in mind, on a yearly basis, how has the state been funding the schools? And let me see if I can make that a little bit more specific. And what I'm trying to get at is, each year, during the past 10 years, has the state been meeting its yearly obligation while not paying what's in the rear? Or have they been coming up short? When I say they, I'm speaking of the governor and the legislative body, coming up short each year, thus basically adding to the amount of money that the students and parents and communities are really owed.
Well, you know, the state has provided increases most years, although there were a couple years when they cut a huge amount of money. So let me just sort of back up. The lawsuit was resolved. It was began in 1993, and the final court order from the highest court in the state was 13 years later in 2006. And then in 2007, the governor, Spitzer at the time, and both houses of the legislature enacted what's called a foundation aid formula. And that was where they made a commitment that over a four-year period, they would increase the funding that goes into the public schools from the state by $5.5 billion. That's only for this for classroom operating aid. That doesn't include other funding they also would provide in areas like transportation and special education services and book textbooks. Those are separate. So this was $5.5 billion for your core operations of the schools, the teaching and learning process. For the first 2 years, the state paid that money. They provided the other money, the transportation and other types of money that I mentioned. But they provided the first two installments of the $5.5 billion. But then the economy tanked in 2009. And they froze the funding. And then in 2010 and 2011, they made massive cuts that basically wiped out all the increases that had been paid. And then since then, the increases have been coming along. Now, you know, this year, for instance, the governor's proposed a $1 billion school aid increase. That sounds like a lot of money, but we have 3 million public school students in New York State. And when you look at inflation and rates, that most of that is just to cover the inflationary cost. That's what the governor himself said. He said this is an inflationary increase. So it doesn't improve the quality of education in the schools that most need it, or if it does, it doesn't do much to improve it. Now, the legislature usually adds on what the governor has, and because of our efforts and because of the champions we have working with us in the Assembly and those in the Senate, who some of them in the Democrats who are with us, we managed to push those numbers up. But not at the level that is needed. And so what happens is that the inequities that exist are locked into place and actually can be getting worse because wealthy communities have more money at the local level.
Yeah.
So that is really the challenges we have.
So to put it in total perspective, you've got one of the more wealthy states of the union who's hit, like everyone else, with the financial crash. But even before that, there was this inadequate funding. Afterwards, you have an attempt to come up with a formula that would hopefully make things right, and even that has not been done on a consistent basis over the years. And so that can lead us into the other areas that you are concerned about, like community schools, like school-to-prison pipeline, other social justice issues, equality issues. How is your organization, when I say your organization, I'm talking about statewide again, how have you been able to, one, get your membership actively involved in pressing for, say, after school, and I know, Margie, you're interested in the pre-K aspect of education.
Yes. Absolutely. I guess one of my biggest challenges through the couple of years, well, the 3 years that I've been fighting for mostly has been for pre-K. My oldest daughter, who is right now 7, she was able to get into pre-K. Unfortunately, we do have a lottery system, which either you're lucky enough to get, you know, picked, you get picked. My daughter had to go through it twice, my second daughter. But the good thing about it, the they have right now is that they have a whole day. My first daughter didn't have that. She had a half day. And basically, she only basically had 1 hour of learning compared to my older daughter, my younger daughter. She has the whole day. So as the state hasn't been doing its job by giving us more funds to the school, not just for the pre-K, but also for other school districts, for the Copic school district that I belong to, basically, with my daughter. They have cut a lot of programs for reading, writing. I mean, all children have different ways of learning, but it's very important because a lot of these kids lack a lot of, you know, reading and writing and math because they weren't able to get enough while they were in pre-K. And this is a huge problem. As for me as a parent, I know. Because, you know, my daughter gets so frustrated because my daughter can't read. She was in a program for a couple of months and then, like 3 months, I guess, and then all of a sudden they cut it off because they didn't have enough funding for it. And these are things that are extremely important. And, you know, when I got involved with AQE, it was, for me, it was, amazing because I was able to find an organization with who I can fight for, you know, who I can feel free to say what I gotta say and fight for my daughters, not just fight for them, but for all our children. I believe too that, you know, when we were younger, I guess we were lucky to have all these wonderful, you know, education that now, unfortunately, our kids, we have to fight for it every single day.
That then was maybe the force that caused you to become an activist. Is that what you're saying? And now you have an organization.
Yes.
Which you can be an activist.
Exactly. Basically, just to fight for my daughters. Just like I said, not just for my daughters, but for everyone. Because, you know, pre-K is extremely important. It's very important for an early education for all children, and it just doesn't stop at pre-K. It continues on to elementary school, middle school, high school. And there's a lot of elements that these schools need. They need a lot of funding, and we're lacking it. Unfortunately, we're lacking it because there's a lot of programs that these kids do need that they don't have. I know I was very fortunate when I was younger. You know, my school had so many wonderful programs, and I was able to join.
because we did have funding. You know, we were able to get through it. Now, it's sad that we have to constantly fight to ask for funding so that our kids could get a better quality of education.
You know, Dr. Miller, I think that Juan Colada from Rochester's on, and one of the things that he did with us a couple months ago was walk from New York City to Albany to draw attention to these issues.
Billy, back to the issues of the other issues, school-to-prison pipeline. What is your organization doing there, and how is the Assembly and Senate helping in that regard?
So we first got involved in the issue of the crisis we have in many urban school districts around school suspensions and student pushout in Buffalo, New York. And the way we got involved was that a young man, Juwan Daniels, was suspended for wandering the hallway. Certainly he should have been in class, but it wasn't something that should rise to the level of suspension. He's not, you know, he's not a threat to anybody. He was suspended for wandering the hallways. As he was walking home from school, he stopped at a bus stop and was randomly killed in a drive-by shooting. People were, needless to say, both tragically grief-stricken and outraged, and began to demand and organize that the school district change its school suspension policies to try to keep students safe and in school. And so after several years of organizing in Buffalo, we managed to win a total reform of the code of conduct to have what the Advancement Project, the national civil rights group that helped us with it, has labeled a model code for the whole country. It has resulted in some substantial reductions in suspensions, but we've also seen some problems with the implementation that need to be addressed, and there needs to be more resources in the schools to provide actual supports for students and teachers to address the issues that are going on. From there, we started then working in Rochester. And in Rochester, local folks, again, parents, organized around the same issue and won a reform with a broad support across many different sectors of the community. Won a reform in the code of conduct there as well. So both of these new codes are resulting in reductions in suspensions and expulsions of students and more clarity about what the expectations of behavior are. And then we're working with the Assembly Education Chair and many individual members of the Assembly, and we have a piece of legislation that the Assembly Education Chair, Kathy Nolan, has introduced and has over 40 sponsors on, called the Safe and Supportive Schools Act. And that would encourage and require school districts to take similar approaches to what is now required in Rochester and Buffalo. Because we're part of a coalition with a lot of other groups, some of which are part of AQE and some of which are not, who are working on these issues in many different parts of the state, New York City and Westchester County, Kingston, Binghamton, Rochester, Buffalo, Long Island, all together working to get the state laws to reflect the same approach, which is a positive approach, one that's based on supports for students and treating suspension as a last resort, not a first option. You know, students are suspended for all kinds of crazy reasons, wearing their shirt untucked, wearing flip-flops, and then for things like wandering the hallway, which, you know, require, you know, some action by the school to try to resolve, but suspension is out of hand and just educationally damaging. So those are some of the things that we've been doing and some of the reasons that issue is important.
Our two assembly persons, back to that question in terms of with this type of organization, grassroots organization behind you, does that help you with your other colleagues as it relates to these issues like school-to-prison pipeline? We talked about wraparound services, community ed. We did talk a little bit about the kindergarten. Does having, again, this type of grassroots organization, you know, people who vote, help you in your advocacy for these programs?
Absolutely. I mean, this is Eileen, by the way. I mean, public education is inherently community-based, and so, of course, it helps to have organized efforts and having a clear message to all the other elected officials, to our governor, to all of my colleagues. But it's also important for folks to know that if we continue to empower our different communities and our locally elected school boards, it's really important to make sure that the voices of every single constituent is heard, because, you know, I think that people don't realize that it's everyone that's experiencing, you know, some the trickle down of the effect of not having our public schools funded. I mean, the most basic right of education is at stake here. So I think that, you know, all of the opportunities that, you know, people talk about in America, one of the biggest things is the opportunity to be able to go to school. And, you know, that's the reason why my parents came to this country, and that's one of the biggest reasons why, you know, we are able to have the opportunities that we have. And I think that, you know, we will continue to fight, and AQE, of course, is an incredible organization that has helped to also provide a voice for some of the folks that, you know, I'm working with in the Assembly. Right now we have a subcommittee of women of color in the caucus, which is, you know, the legislative caucus, which is the Black, Puerto Rican, Hispanic, and Asian legislative caucus, and we actually have a subcommittee for women of color to be able to work on and work together on important issues that affect our communities. And one of the biggest issues that we have chosen is, of course, to work with AQE to fight for CFE funding.
We now have Ms. Eve Shippens on our party line. We tried a couple times to get her, and I messed up in terms of one of the digits. I was given a wrong number, and so she was waiting for us to call, and we were calling the wrong number. To Eve, I apologize. That was totally my mess up, and that's all I can say at the point at this point. What we've been talking about are some of the things you already know and you're very active in, and that in terms of getting the public involved in coming out and demonstrating and pressing their legislators, the governor, to do better by public education, which I know you are extremely heavily involved with here in Buffalo. We've talked about the bill that is due, $4.5 billion that's due, and Governor, you're not proposing anything that really comes close to satisfying that overdue bill. We talked about current formula for financing public education on a year-by-year basis, and we also talked about restorative justice, community schools, and these are all things that I know personally that you are involved in. Tell the people right quick what Buffalo, which has a pretty, I think, nice size contingent of grassroots individuals pushing for educational justice in this country. So just quickly, to bring everybody up, what's happening here in Buffalo?
Well, the Buffalo Public Schools have been chronically underfunded, and they're currently owed $91 million from the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. And how that translates in Buffalo is that you go into our building, and we have out-of-date textbooks, 10 years plus old. We don't have enough resources for our kids. When we are looking to fully implement restorative justice practices, we don't. It's being phased in training-wise over 3 years, as opposed to having a whole, you know, district-wide training ongoing. We don't have enough support staff in our buildings about attendance, about restorative justice, about all of the things that our kids are coming in with greater needs. A lot of our students live in poverty, and so they're coming in and they need services to help them get an equal education, and it's just not happening. So in Buffalo, we've had some victories, though. We just flipped the school board this past May, and we have a pro-public education school board for the first time in quite a few years. So that was a tremendous victory. There's also many organizations and just community members have stepped up to really campaign against one of our very toxic school board members who is our local Trump person and has really been into privatizing our schools. So that's some positive energy going in. And we really have... people are becoming more aware of the missing money because you hear the narrative all the time about how our schools are well-funded. But if you look at the needs of the students who are coming in, they're not well-funded compared to the needs. We are a major refugee resettlement area, so those students need English as a second language classes and other support services to help them get acclimated to a new country. And we also have a very high percent of students who are lead poisoned. So that causes some additional needs. So when you look at the needs to how much money is spent, we are severely underfunded.
I think, everyone, we hear a theme here that echoes across the United States. That is the underfunding, inadequate funding, inequitable funding of public education in America that had its onslaught probably beginning with the Reagan administration, so we're talking about a 35-year period, and has been downhill for the funding of public education probably ever since the 1980s. And what we're also hearing here is we do have, I think Eve put it very, very well when we're saying that the public is now beginning to wake up and see the dots, connecting the dots that best and truly, more accurately explain why public education is in the state that it is. And the narrative that has been put out over the last, at least the last 15 to 20 years, that public schools are failing, public schools are in need of dismantling in order to be able to come back with a better system that's going to be more productive in terms of higher test scores and being college and or career ready when you come out of school. I think, and especially for those of the audience who have been with the War Report since we've been on air for the past 3 years, you see what other people are beginning to see now, and that is these dots are, a good term, they are alternative fact explanations, and that part of our real problem is poverty, as we already know, and segregation, which we already know, that those two impact and cause a lot of the damage that we are experiencing in our public education system nationwide. And that funding, yes, the more the better, of course, especially if it's used in the best possible way. And that you're hearing, especially from Margie and from Eve, the damages that people are beginning to wake up and say, whoa, wait a minute. Our kids are smarter than what they're saying. Our teachers maybe are not responsible. When I say maybe, because some people still want to blame the teachers. And that maybe we need to get more involved and push harder for the things that we need in order for our children across the board to have the best shot possible of getting a quality education. What's next on the agenda for the Alliance? We got about 5 minutes left.
Well, one thing we're gearing up for is March 4th, we're announcing, you know, this we'll be announcing it widely this coming week, so this could be the first public announcement of it right now, is a People's March for Education Justice. And this will be in cities across the state, Buffalo, Rochester, Schenectady, New York City, Kingston, Long Island. There will be local marches to draw attention to what's happening with the state budget. Because our state budget process, Governor Cuomo, who has not been a supporter of public education, has proposed his budget. It is sorely inadequate. And he also wants to repeal the whole campaign for fiscal equity formula. He doesn't want any responsibility to fund our four schools, our schools in poor communities. So we have this march coming up on March the 4th all over the state. And we're putting that together. We're asking people to plan their own local marches as part of this. We'll provide support and help out, but that we want people to take the initiative on their own local levels to do these marches. And this is a big push because between now and the end of March is when our state budget gets resolved here in New York. So we're looking to get in this year's budget the commitment to make the phase-in of all the $4.3 billion that are owed. We're calling for a two-year phase-in. The state assembly has called for a three-year phase-in. We need the phase-in. We need the full amount. We need it paid, and we need it to happen. We've been fighting for a long time for this, and every year delayed is a year denied for the children and students in our state.
What kind of numbers are you hoping for in terms of your march in March?
Well, I'm not really sure yet what those numbers are. You know, we're just in the first days of planning this, but I think it will vary, in different communities, anywhere from hundreds of people in some communities to thousands in other communities. And in some, places they may be, a handful of people, depending on how many communities get involved.
Margie?
Yes.
In terms of the upcoming march, what are you planning on doing?
Well, most definitely, I will be there. I am planning on figuring what we can do with AQE, maybe going into making some flyers, making some announcements, but we definitely need to get a lot of people out there and get a lot of support because this is a huge event. It's not just, for our kids locally, it's, statewide, and I'm going to be there. I'm going to be fighting, until the end, until hopefully we can get full funding, and we're going to keep fighting until we get it. I mean, Billy said, this is, we can't have this delayed anymore. We have to keep fighting every chance we get. So definitely be there.
E for Buffalo.
I'm sorry, what? For Buffalo, what are we planning?
Yes.
Well, we're just starting out the planning phases, but I'd like to see a lot more kids get active in this. I teach in a high school. There's many of my teacher friends who are activists also teach in high schools. I'd like to see our kids get on board with this and bring their parents because it's really fighting for their constitutional rights. And I'd like to see this up-and-coming generation more politically involved.
Okay. Yulene, are you still on?
Yep. I think that, we have to continue to fight alongside AQE. It's been 10 years since the CFE decision, and New York's media students are still waiting for the state to fully fund their schools, obviously. So right now we have to keep on fighting to make sure that, the governor's proposal of only $1 billion in new school aid, as is quote-unquote inflation increase, which is not designed to actually improve schools, will make sure, that we keep on fighting for the adequate amount of funding for our public schools, which Billy has already talked about. So we will continue to fight, and I look forward to fighting alongside this amazing group of folks.
I don't know if Kimberly is still on because she had announced earlier that she could only stay on maybe a half an hour. So, Kimberly, are you there? Billy?
I'm still here. so we are, I think, really excited about the fact that there's so much enthusiasm all over the state about this fight, and people need to see that there's a connection between what happens in all of our states, in this case in New York State, and some of the things that are happening at the national level. And right now, many of us are outraged and determined to stop the things that are happening right now with the Trump administration in terms of the attack on immigrants and the efforts at deporting people and the Muslim ban. And we need those fights, and we need to fight our local level and our state level. We need educational justice, and we, in many ways, we can't just have the problem's not only the Trump administration. That's a major assault on our entire democracy. But even, here we have a Democratic governor in Andrew Cuomo, and he is not investing in our students. So our immigrant communities that are under attack right now, they need their rights, but they also need for their children to have great schools. And that's what we're not getting from the governor here in New York. So we're not going to let off. And we have many, many allies in the legislature, but most importantly, there's a tremendous amount of support on the ground in the communities, but we need to build that. We need more. We cannot win without a more robust effort than even we've had so far.
Okay, we're running very close to being out of time. I want to make one last comment. When we came back from Albany a couple weeks ago, Eve asked me what I thought of the effort to get everyone up to Albany and go around to the various assemblies and members and what have you. And I told her what she just said a moment ago, that for me the most impressive thing was the number of students that we were able to get up to Albany and the number of students who have a first-hand shot at looking at democracy in operation. We have a number of students who in 2 years will be voters, 4 years they'll be voters. And the more that they can get involved now in things here locally, going back to Albany, the more I believe and I hope that they will become the type of democratic citizen that we need in a multicultural society. We desperately need their knowledge of what's going on. We need that's their awareness. We need their understanding. We need their emotional engagement in this, and then hopefully those three will make them become individually or collectively part of a social, positive social action or social movement to protect not only our public schools, but our democracy, which is definitely under attack. So I congratulate everyone who was involved in getting the kids up a few weeks ago. With that, I have to go because my time is up. Thanks, everyone, and have a good rest of this Sunday. Thank you.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.